Chapter 2. Even with 2 feast days to study, his appearance for his symbology examination was problematic, not because he hadn't read the texts. Thanks to the memory spell, he now knew the technical descriptions and invocations for hundreds of common arcane symbols, but because he hadn't actually used a tithe of them in his short career. Symbology was one area in which the masters expected a practical knowledge, no matter how erudite the student. Still, Tyndall struggled through, and when asked, he was able to produce 8 basic glyphs to his examiner's satisfaction, and 6 that were utter failures.
"You have a good knowledge of the academics," admitted Master Dunrain after the final failure, "but you need to work on the practical side. If you'd like to quiz me on war magic symbols," Tyndall offered, "I could show you a few."
No, not what we're here for," the man dismissed.
"You have demonstrated your abilities, young man. I have a proper appreciation for your level of knowledge. You are dismissed."
Master Dunrain's even tone told Tyndall nothing of how well or poorly he'd done, but he'd given as complete answers as he could. Indeed, he had rattled off dozens of symbols, so many that he was feeling unusually cocky when he got to his afternoon examination, the one on thermomantics and photomantics. He was prepared for that one. The ability to manipulate matter with energy to produce heat and light were pretty basic fundamentals, and just to be sure, he had read Alstod's short but thorough treatise on the subject, as close to a reference manual as one could ask. But when he had quietly called it into memory to answer a question about thermodynamics, Master Indrain gave a casual wave with a wand, and the spell failed.
"Let's try it without the memory charm, shall we?" he asked, amused. "Young man, do you think this is the first time someone has tried to evade a fair and proper examination of their abilities? Perhaps some of the other instructors are willing to let you depend upon that sort of thing, but I am not that lenient. Pray, tell me again, what is the second sacred law of thermodynamics?"
Tyndall paled, swallowed hard, but he answered the question from memory. After that, his sessions with the masters got a lot more difficult again.
"Serve you right for trying to cheat,"
Rondal chuckled when Tyndall confessed his discovery that night after dinner.
"I wasn't cheating. I was just using a resource," he said defensively. "Well, now you won't be able to use it. Still, that wasn't a bad idea. I'd love to learn the spell," he said almost grudgingly.
"It is handy," agreed Tyndall reluctantly.
"In fact, there's a lot of interesting things in blue magic I never thought of. Most of the theory is way beyond me, but some of the spells are quite practical."
"Like what?"
Rondal asked absently.
Tyndall enjoyed being an authority for once. "Well, did you know you can compel someone to tell the truth, or to forget a day of their lives, or forget they ever even knew you?"
"Sounds dangerous,"
Rondal said after considering it a moment.
"The censorate thought so," Tyndall agreed. "They almost banned it. Except for their use, when they were hunting down unregistered foot wizards and prophesying hedge witches. Immoral use of psychomancy is a serious crime, or it used to be."
"It should still be,"
Rondal said quickly. "Spells of forgetfulness are one thing. What about a spell of compulsion?" Tyndall thought about the possibilities.
"Ethically? I don't know. But that could be a lot of fun. Until someone used it on you. Like that innkeeper's daughter who wants to get married so badly,"
Rondal reminded him. Tyndall blushed, despite himself. Before he was even knighted, back in Master Minolan's home village of Talry on Burain, he had been stalked and nearly captured by a husband-hungry young innkeeper's daughter. While he still had fond memories of the girl, she was not the sort Tyndall found truly appealing, much less a fit wife for a knight mage, should he ever desire one. Still, he felt a bit defensive about her. She'd helped him out. She'd been very sweet, and she'd been one of the first girls to kiss him properly.
"She's not a mage," Tyndall pointed out quickly, "and she wasn't so bad. If I was still a stable boy, she'd be quite a catch."
He had a fond spot for the girl, he decided, and suddenly determined to pay a call on her again one day, should he have the chance.
"Just an example,"
Rondal shrugged.
"Besides, I've always heard that psychomancy was highly unpredictable. The human mind just isn't as neat and tidy as the sacred periodic table. I'm just saying it could be useful. Hells, a third of the war magic combat spells are psychomantic.
Do you recall what Lady Pentandra did to those two censers at Master Min's wedding? Rondol reminded him. That was psychomancy. Had to be. They didn't even know their own names after Pentandra was done with them. Those Imperials all have all sorts of forbidden magic, they say, he said a little suspiciously. Well, dismissed Tyndall, you know what kinds of things they say? Lady Pentandra was acting to protect Master Min, Tyndall reminded him defensively. Sure, sure, Rondol dismissed. I'm not criticizing. It was just likely illegal. But about that spell? Tyndall looked at Rondol searchingly. After all the acrimony the two had indulged in during their rivalry, to have his better-educated junior apprentice actually ask for him to teach him a spell touched Tyndall's pride. All right, he sighed as he took a seat. It's actually not that hard. Eventually, after the holiday, the two apprentices were called into the presence of the highest-ranking faculty for a report on their findings thus far. Tyndall found himself anxiously biting his lip while he stood in front of the long table in the faculty hall and listened. My lords, Headmaster Alwyn of Tyrone began in his creaky old voice, it gives me a certain degree of pleasure to be able to inform your master that your skills are adequate for your age and experience. He made the pronouncement almost reluctantly. Or it could just be his great age, Tyndall reasoned. He tried not to take it personally. Master Alwyn continued, we were able to evaluate your areas of weakness, identify your strengths, give what remedial instruction it was felt was necessary, and prepare a course of individual study for each of you. In preparation for eventually taking the traditional journeyman examinations, here, then, are our specific findings. Sir Rondal of Sevendor, he continued, glancing at a scroll, and obviously using mage sight to correct his vision to read it. You have demonstrated an admirable grasp of philosophy of magic, thaumaturgy, a decided competence in greater elemental practice, an understanding of lesser elemental theory and alchemy, an impressive knowledge of magical history, and a talent for mathematics, natural science, pyromancy, and enchantment. Well done, young man, the old wizard added, his eyes cutting to the bookworm. If you had been properly enrolled here, no doubt you would have been ready for your exams a year ago, or perhaps some advanced study. Thank you, Headmaster, Rondal said, bowing humbly. Tyndall's face burned. At least he could have the good grace to gloat a little. Sir Tyndall of Sevendor, Master Alwyn continued, as a second scroll was brought to his attention by an aide. Your scores were less impressive, but in consideration of your unique circumstances, it is felt that your wit is sufficient to absorb some remedial education in certain subjects to bring you up to level. You have an excellent grasp of basic cantrips, he said, almost apologetically, and a talent for wood-bending. I saw the chair you put together. That was quite striking. A good basic knowledge of greater elemental practice, and a bit of a knack for sigils and runes. But there are many, many gaps in your education, gaps that I cannot in good conscience allow you to leave here unfilled. Not if we are to fulfill your master's request. Thank you, Headmaster, Tyndall said, almost choking on the words. So, my lords, the wizard continued, flopping the scroll onto the table, I am recommending that young Sir Rondal here be given 2 more weeks of advanced study with the lecturers in thaumaturgy, enchantment, and lesser elemental theory. Sir Tyndall shall spend the next 4 weeks in training. When he has satisfied the faculty of his basic competence in his deficient areas, then he will be sent after you to Relancor. 4 weeks? Tyndall almost shrieked. I'm going to be studying, my lord, Alwyn said sharply, studying every waking moment, taking every opportunity to improve your knowledge of our art. That's not fair, Tyndall almost shouted. He struggled to keep himself under control. It's not my fault that I didn't get started until a few years ago. And this is not a punishment, young man, Alwyn riposted without offence. It is an opportunity. An opportunity hundreds of magi across the duchies would give a limb for, and you should keep that in mind.
Tyndall opened his mouth to speak and then closed it. He knew the old wizard was right. Inarian Academy was the largest and most renowned school of magic in the Western Duchies, and one of only two in the New Kingdom.
I understand, Headmaster Alwyn. Tyndall sighed. I'm just not used to such inactivity.
Nor should you be, Alwyn chuckled. I was a young man once, even did a stint as a war mage, believe it or not, before I caught a flux on campaign. Nothing wrong with brisk activity, young man. It encourages an active mind. I have heard that you occasionally practice in the guard's yard. I encourage you to continue. It will help keep you focused and your mind on your studies if you exercise an hour a day. Both of you can count on a full course load for the next few weeks. I suggest you take full advantage of it. From what I understand, your opportunities to study will likely be limited in the future.
The old wizard stared off into space a moment, reflecting a bit, before he concluded,
This is an uncertain new world your master has forged for the Magi, and it appears you are destined to become his agents in it. Whether that is a good thing or a bad thing remains to be seen. There are many of us who are suspicious of the consequences of overturning the bans. But regardless of what happens, you are to be ennobled war magi. Knights magi, they're calling it. A blend of chivalry and sorcery. The very idea is novel. And dangerous, he added warningly, particularly when Irianite is involved.
But master, Rondal objected politely, we are faithful servants of the spellmonger and loyal to the king. How could our service be dangerous?
It isn't your loyalty or your dedication that is at issue, Sir Rondal,
Headmaster Alwyn sighed.
Young men are by nature hot-headed and foolish. Such a power in young hands is inherently dangerous.
The old man looked out the window wistfully.
Part of me dreads the trials ahead of us in this new world, as wizards. For good or ill, your master has smashed the old way of doing things.
Then he looked back at them sharply, his eyes fierce under his bushy eyebrows.
And part of me is envious that I am not myself young enough to enjoy the changes. I do not blame you for your enthusiasm and eagerness, gentlemen, he said, amused. Nor do I resent such power as you have in hands so young. I merely urge you to temper it with education, caution, and wisdom.
I bet you're elated, Tyndall said accusingly as they left the master's hall. Two more endless weeks of studying everything you want.
Are you kidding?
You're the one who should be thrilled, Rondal said angrily.
You get to read in peace for 4 weeks. I've got to go to bloody military school in a fortnight.
How is that fair?
Tyndall agreed, disgusted.
Why should you get to go first?
Get to go?
Rondal shrieked.
I feel like I've been condemned for being better than you.
What?
Tyndall whirled around to face his fellow apprentice.
Better than me? You know what I mean,
Rondal said sourly.
I know more than you. I'm a better wizard than you.
Tyndall stared at him in disbelief.
Better wizard? Just how do you figure that? You may know more than I do, on parchment. But did you defeat 2 censorate war magi on your own? If you remember correctly, Lady Pentandra and I were there to help out. I was doing fine without you. You were about to get blasted without us. Without her, maybe. You were pretty much useless.
Tyndall snorted.
I was following her orders,
Rondal said, his nostrils flaring.
I was saving Master Min's family,
Tyndall stated triumphantly.
And that makes you a better wizard?
Rondal asked in amazement.
That speaks to your motivations, not to your skill. Some day, maybe, we'll settle who the better wizard is. But based on those marks, you'd better hope it's not any time soon.
His fellow apprentice nearly bellowed as he stomped away. Tyndall seethed as he watched him go, but he didn't have a ready retort, mostly because he couldn't really argue with Rondal's reasoning. Tyndall had outstanding motivations, but even in the scrap he'd just bragged about, he hadn't used anything much classier than a cantrip. Rondal was indeed, Tyndall realized, the better wizard, and for some reason that infuriated him.
Tyndall considered heading to the library to study, as he had been bidden, but his mind was not on scholarship, after his argument. Instead, he sought out the gatehouse guards and managed to work out some of his emotions with wooden swords and padded armor. He'd been fortunate enough to arrive just as the duty shifts were changing, so he was able to spar with 4 guards each in turn. One after the other, they fell to his blade, or at least gave him a challenging fight. Only Ancient Galdan had any success in keeping the lad's swift strikes and well-delivered blows from bruising him.
"What's gotten into you today, boy?"
the older man said, after their third pass with the wooden practice swords.
"You seem driven by demons."
"Just working out some tension,"
Tyndall said, tight-lipped.
"That's more than mere examination stress,"
the old veteran noted quietly. "I've seen enough students come through here to tell.
Nay, lad, someone's gotten to you."
"I'm not nearly as good a mage as I am a war mage," snorted Tyndall as he strapped on the practice armor.
Galdan shrugged as he traded his steel sword for a wooden one.
"That's to be expected. Takes years to become a good mage."
"Well, I didn't get years,"
Tyndall complained sourly as he came in to guard.
"I got months, and now everyone is expecting everything from me."
Galdan chuckled as he returned Tyndall's offhanded salute.
"Lay on. Welcome to manhood, boy.
You're going to spend the rest of your life chasing after your own inadequacies, no matter if you're a mage or a miller." He rocked back and forth as he and Tyndall circled around a common axis, seeking advantage of their opponent.
"That's hardly a comforting thought,"
Tyndall said acidly as he threw a vicious combination of blows to head, torso, and leg.
"Nor was it meant to be,"
the soldier said philosophically, after neatly blocking them.
"There's damn little comforting in manhood. First, we fail the expectations of our fathers," he said,
striking quickly each new point.
"Then of our masters, then our wives, and then our children."
"So why even bother?"
the younger man asked, as he spun and struck at the man's opposite shoulder.
"That's what you have to figure out,"
Galdan said, parrying the strike.
"Every man gets a different answer. For some, it's duty,"
he said, breaking away and resuming the fight,
"or honor, or the pursuit of a craft or a vision. For some, it's a woman, or all women. For some, they struggle and seek their entire lives and die before they figure it out. For you,"
he continued, looking at the apprentice with an appraising eye before rushing to attack,
"for you, I'd suggest you figure it out quickly before it burns a passionate lad like you to cinders,"
he said, as Tyndall blocked his blows.
"What if all I can come up with is disappointment?" asked Tyndall. "That's hardly a worthy aspiration." "Then you'd be doing as well as many a man,"
the old ancient agreed, stepping away and saluting after the rigorous session.
"Although I doubt you'll do anything so uninteresting, Sir Tyndall. I'd offer you another bout, but I think I see fresher victims approaching."
He was not mistaken. A small group of students was approaching, 4 or 5 of the seniors, boys about his own age, Caffin and Stanol leading them. He recognized a few from brief introductions here and there and the occasional lecture. Bandran of Gars was one of those boys who talked far too much, and the shifty-eyed Daris of Hodensmead was there too, a lad from the Castorly Wilderlands, whose reputation for being an asshole was greater than Tyndall's.
"We heard you were practicing, Sir Tyndall,"
Caffin said with a broad grin when he got to the edge of the yard.
"Some of the lads wanted to watch. Me hop get in a little sparring, if you're agreeable,"
he added casually, "and not too winded." Tyndall surveyed the group and grinned.
"As long as you don't accuse me of cheating again,"
he agreed.
"Of course not,"
Stanol said hurriedly.
"You're just... anyway, you said you weren't even using war magic."
"I wasn't, I swear," Tyndall said, adjusting his helmet.
"So, what if you did?"
"What?" Tyndall asked, not understanding what the boy was asking.
"What if you used war magic when you fought?"
Caffin explained.
"How many of us could you fight at one time?"
"And win?" Tyndall asked.
"You know, I have no idea."
And so it was decided that Tyndall would try to fight 4 of the boys at the same time, much to the amusement of the guards and their captain. They scraped together enough armor, with Tyndall promising not to hit any exposed bits, and outfitted 4 of the boys enough for the bout. While they were armoring, Another half dozen had gathered from across the campus.
"I really haven't tried this before," Tyndall said almost apologetically. He suddenly realized that just beating them without a lesson wasn't exactly chivalrous. He felt obligated to turn it into a demonstration, to remove the dishonor.
"The spell I'm about to use is a standard war magi perception augmentation. It burns power like cheap wood, but it speeds your perceptions, as if time were slowing down around you. A psychomantic charm," he added, proudly displaying his new knowledge as he strapped his helmet on. "It acts only on yourself, on your own mind, but it can make seconds seem to pass like minutes." He tapped into his witchstone around his neck and invoked the proper symbols in his mind, whispering the mnemonic that triggered the spell. It had become second nature by now. He had it hung almost all the time now, thanks to the possibility of sudden attack by censers or goblins or angry fathers, and it got easier and easier with each use. "Leon!" he shouted, and encouraged his fellow students to attack him as the spell took hold. Suddenly everything around him was moving as if through a cloud of thick, cold honey. It was during moments like this that Tyndall's mind was the clearest, when he could stop and consider his options and their consequences, carefully weigh his best course of action, and then proceed with confidence and commitment. Augmented, he commanded his universe. It was when he got rushed that he made clumsy mistakes. Within the first few seconds in his augmented state, he had evaluated the strengths and weaknesses of each boy facing him. None of them were particularly noteworthy. Of them all, only Caffin seemed to understand how to hold and wield a sword. The rest had a litany of problems, from shoddy footwork to poor posture to embarrassingly weak grips. They may have studied arms in their youth, but these scions of nobility hadn't held a sword in earnest in years. It was almost too easy. Taking his wooden mage blade in hand, he carefully moved between his first two opponents while they were still lunging clumsily at him, and without otherwise touching them, he smacked them both solidly in their helmets. Bandran of Garz and Daris of Holden's Mead fell like toy soldiers, not enough to injure, but enough to ring their chimes and knock them off balance. Stannol was being more cautious in his approach this time, but Tyndall couldn't help but note how loosely he held his blade as he tried to direct the attack. Smirking to himself at incredible speed, he plucked the wooden greatsword out of the big student's hands, reversed it, and used the hilt to clunk the boy in the back of his helmet. Once he was sure Stannol was going to end up face down in the sand, Tyndall could turn his attention to the last boy, Caffin. The son of a sea knight was wild-eyed as he frantically looked around for his opponent. His body had yet to catch up to his reflexes, and while he swung his blade in a passable strike, Tyndall was far beyond its reach. Instead, he put his body in line with Caffin's, extending his leg so that the boy tripped over his thigh. His practice sword was flung away, and to his horror, Tyndall realized its trajectory would carry it directly into the unprotected crowd. Cursing to himself, Tyndall realized what he had to do to avoid catastrophe. He leapt over Caffin's stumbling body and made an effort to get to the sword before it landed. He made it with little time to spare, even in his augmented state. He grabbed the wooden blade just before it collided with the very pretty face of Astasia, the imperial student he'd met the day before. She must have come at the commotion, he realized, not knowing it was he who was creating it. Her pretty eyes flashed at him over the top of the wooden blade. Grinning broadly, he couldn't resist showing off. He continued to hold the wooden sword in one hand, but tucked his own under his arm before leaning casually on the fence that surrounded the yard. He also took a moment to thoroughly smell the tantalizingly girlish scent of the dusky lass and appreciate her pretty features up close and in the daylight. Only then did he drop the combat augmentation.
"I just knew you couldn't stay away from me," he said to her casually, while the four boys behind him tumbled into the sand, their helmets ringing.
Astasia squealed in surprise, startled. When she realized who the speeding warrior was, she blushed and then frowned.
"You?"
"Me," Tyndall admitted, charmingly, as he lowered the carelessly flung sword.
"Just saving the day."
"You?" she repeated. "Me," Tyndall said with feigned humility, "and my big sword, and your face," Tyndall added, completely unblemished by splinters and contusions.
"You... I..."
the pretty girl sputtered.
"Excuse me, won't you?"
he asked sweetly, then turned to face his opponents and addressed their performance. His tone changed dramatically as he critiqued their performance. "Kevin, you were bloody awful, and you were the best of the lot. If you don't keep your feet under you, why have them? Do you just like shoes? Stanel, if you don't hang on to your sword, don't expect to keep it. And you too, bloody pathetic. If your sires paid for swordmasters by Duin's hairy sack, I hope they got refunds. Daris, I could have handed you your head, you were so slow. And Bandrin, you
just need help,"
he said sadly. The crowd burst into applause and cheers. Tyndall felt a little foolish accepting them. This wasn't difficult magic to do, just obscure. Who taught war magic at a scholarly Imperial Academy? Why would they need to? But he didn't mind the attention. Even Astasia had to admit she was impressed, although she spun it into a technical vein that meant she didn't have to admit she was impressed with him, just his magic. Tyndall was no fool. He took the compliment. Law 12 of the Meditations instructed the young man to maximize his strengths and minimize his weaknesses when under a maiden's thoughtful gaze. Magic and swordplay were both strengths for him. She might be a cool academic, but Astasia couldn't ignore his performance. He did the stunt twice more, the third time besting 6 opponents to the amazement of an ever more growing crowd.
"That third time would have been beyond the ability of all but Adept War Magi,"
he instructed his opponents, panting from the exertion. "Without Irionite, it's difficult for a mage to raise enough power to manage that for more than a few seconds. With a Witchstone, well, I could go all day," he said, earning some naughty chuckles and girlish giggles from the crowd. He grinned at the girls and made a point of speaking with a few who weren't Astasia, particularly the plainer-looking ones who were openly doting or overly expressive about their admirations. He didn't even look at her while he did so. Law 2 was quite clear on the utility of that move. Seek favour and attention from those maids whose interest you enjoy, but do not care for in jealousy oft has a maiden found a man more appealing than when he suffers from attention's lack. Ancient Galdan broke up the gathering after that. It was almost time for the evening meal, he reminded everyone, and there wasn't a student there that didn't have a mountain of studying to do. Tyndall, most of all.
"Good work, lad," the old soldier confided as he helped him remove his practice armor. "That was as neat a spell as I've seen, and I've seen some war magi," he added appreciatively. "Your sword play is really quite good."
"Thank you," Tyndall shrugged.
"It really didn't need to be against that lot. I just wish all of my studies came to me as easily as swordplay."
"It's all just studying,"
Galdan pointed out philosophically.
"The flash of a blade or the turn of a page, you're doing the same work, just focused on a different part of the mind."
"The pages seem to outnumber me,"
Tyndall said morosely, shaking his head.
"You just have to find their weakness," chuckled the older man. "Every opponent has one. Play to your strengths, lad. That's my best advice,"
he said, inadvertently quoting Sire Rose of Castle Hart, as Tyndall stripped off his practice armor. The remark caught his attention, and he wondered if that was a coincidence. Tyndall felt better as he walked back across the campus to his quarters in the North Tower. His arms and legs ached a bit, and his chest thudded with the exertion, but he hadn't felt this alive in days. Weeks. War magic was something he was good at. Not the only thing, thank Ishii, but one of the things he was better at least better than Rondal. That was his strength, he knew in his heart. But how could he use that to tame the dragon-sized pile of books and scrolls he was supposed to get through? Every step closer to his room seemed to bring him closer to that doom, when he spied Astasia lurking nearby, trying hard not to look like she was lurking. Tyndall grinned to himself. He might despair of learning the secrets of an untamed universe, but some things he could predict, like the effect of a deft display of swordplay could have on a girl.
"Well, that was interesting,"
she admitted as she caught up with him.
"Just a little exercise,"
he dismissed. "It keeps me from going crazy here."
"Why would you go crazy here?"
she asked, confused.
"This is about the most wonderful place there is."
"Wonderful? If you're a bookworm, perhaps. After 3 hours of reading, I'm ready to claw at the inside of my own skull. I prefer a more active life.
I prefer to understand the secrets of the universe,
she riposted flirtatiously.
You'd get along well with my fellow apprentice, then.
Rondal of Sevendor.
Sir Rondal,
he corrected, also one of the spellmonger's apprentices.
The better one, to hear him tell it. Then I take it your master doesn't put a premium on swordplay?
She asked with a shy smile.
Oh, he does, Tyndall admitted with a smile, enjoying her company. But he's even more concerned with our academics.
He trained here, he reminded her. Apparently slaughtering legions of goblins and the odd troll just isn't good enough for the old man these days, he said philosophically. He wants us to get good marks, too. Astasia laughed, her dimples dancing across her cheek.
You haven't really slaughtered a troll, have you?
She asked, her face turning cloudy as she realized the possibility was genuine.
Close enough, Tyndall said glumly. Really, it's not as glamorous as it sounds. Trolls stink, like an uncleansed cesspit. So do goblins, for that matter. But Master Minolin is right. I do need to learn this stuff, more of this stuff. It's amazing what I can do, but I'm starting to recognize the limits of your education,
she finished diplomatically, smiling at his admission. Realize what an idiot I am, is what I was going to say, he admitted, but I admit that I like your version better. He expected her to gloat over that, but Astasia's delicate face looked sympathetic, surprisingly enough. With a start, he realized he was inadvertently following Sire Rose's advice again, this time law number 9. For best effect, the youth should demonstrate to a maid that their hearts can find connection, should he desire to proceed further on the road to love.
You just have to relax, she advised thoughtfully. Quit worrying about the exam and learn the material. As Mistress Quintine says, no one who has mastered the subject should ever have to worry about a test.
Ah, perfect. All I have to do is wake up as an adept tomorrow then, he moaned. I can't master one discipline, much less all this arcane stuff.
Just relax, she repeated. You'll get it. We all do eventually.
He stared up at the tower he had to climb to begin his fight against the book dragon. I hope you're right. Otherwise, well, I hope someone somewhere needs a good stable boy. Apparently I'm not cut out for the life of a market conjurer.
I heard you were busy on campus after our meeting today, Rondal remarked, looking up from his book at the room's lone table. You mean the practice yard? Tyndall asked casually. Why, were you there? He asked skeptically. If he had one criticism of Rondal, one legitimate criticism, it was how quickly he found other things to do than work with his muscles and improve his swordplay. Me? No. I've had enough of that madness for a while. I was studying. Magic. And my point, O senior apprentice, was that you should have been too. Hey, they told me I could practice a little. It keeps my head from exploding from the pressure, Tyndall shot back defensively. Practice, yes. Put on a bloody entertainment. Did you do the dance of the war magi or just blast someone with a wand? I don't think that's what they had in mind. I was just demonstrating some war magic to the students who'd never seen it before, Tyndall explained defensively. Isn't that what this place is supposed to be about? A chance to share our education? And no, I didn't use any war wands. Just a little combat augmentation, he added sullenly. Rondal snorted. You were trying to impress a skirt again, weren't you? He demanded. No, Tyndall said sourly. Then he considered. Well, I may have anyway, though without really trying. You know a girl named, what was it, Astasia? He said, finally recalling it by how her lips moved when she said her own name. Astasia looks like an imperial, a senior student. Rondal's eyes bulged. You mean Astasia of Mistalligan? I don't know where she came from, but wherever it is, they grow big. She's from House Deverina, descended from one of the great Wenshari magical families, Rondal explained. Her grandfather was Remiran Ducal Court Mage for 20 years. I heard about her from Lady Pantandra as someone I should try to meet if I got the chance. She's considered something of a genius. I hear she's almost legendary for her alchemical skills. Why would a scholar like her be hanging around the practice yard? With you? Rondal asked, his nostrils flaring.
She likes the way I swing a sword.
Tyndall shrugged, pleased with how impressed Rondol was with the attention he was getting. And from whom? He decided to add another dig. She was giving me advice about my study load, he added nonchalantly.
Astasia of Miss Dalligan spoke to you,
Rondol repeated, his eyes wide.
She probably showed up here knowing more magic than you and I will ever learn. Ishi's tits.
Was she pretty?
Gorgeous,
sighed Tyndall, brown eyes that glistened like black walnut, hair as black as night, a smile you could watch forever, and smart. Too smart. Smart enough to see what an idiot I am.
Well, that doesn't take much, Rondol dismissed, and it's hardly newsworthy. But she actually came up and talked to you.
Yes, Tyndall said, enjoying his fellow apprentice's envy. She told me I just needed to relax. Just another bit of useless advice I've been getting. Relax. Master the subject. Play to your strengths. Don't be such an asshole, Rondol added in the same instructive tone. All brilliant bits of advice that you should really carefully consider, I agree. But Astasia of Miss Dalligan, that's impressive, he admitted. She's comely, Tyndall shrugged, but I doubt if she's going to spoon-feed me alchemy. Not when you haven't managed basic lesser elemental theory, agreed Rondol. Astasia of Miss Dalligan, she must have been impressed by your swordwork. It certainly wasn't your magic.
Not necessarily, Tyndall protested. I was doing a war magic demonstration. Combat augmentations, perception enhancement, that sort of thing. I took out 6 student opponents at the same time, he bragged weakly.
I'm sure they were stunning examples of manliness, Rondol said, rolling his eyes.
And you were using war magic. Perhaps she was intrigued by the novelty.
She said as much. Tyndall looked away guiltily.
Ron, I'm worried about my studying.
You're chatting up Astasia of Miss Dalligan, and you're worried about your studies? He asked incredulously.
Relax. Your exams are over for the most part, he pointed out, turning the page in the book he was reading. Everything now is just absorbing information and learning new spells.
That's what I mean, he sighed heavily. You've seen my reading list. It's only gotten longer now. Even with the memory spells, so I can review it later in my mind, I'm only hitting the surface.
Well, Astasia was right about one thing. You do need to relax. I know you want to do well, but there's no substitute for turning pages, and no time like now to get back to it.
Rondol pushed the thaumaturgy book Tyndall had been reading across the desk they shared toward him.
I know,
Tyndall sighed as he picked up the book. 4 more weeks of this hell of parchment. Just think of the bright side. You only have to put up with me for 2 more, Rondol observed. That has to lift a burden.
You aren't so bad, Tyndall admitted. Even if...
Let's end your sentence there, shall we? Rondol interrupted suddenly. I'm already irritated you've met Astasia and I haven't, and any further discussion isn't going to get the pages read. It's just another distraction waiting to happen.
Tin, you've got to ignore everything else and just read, study, ask questions.
You have a great opportunity here, and not nearly enough time to take advantage of it, he finished, annoyed.
That's what Master Min wants you to do.
Yeah, Tyndall said, returning to his book with a sigh.
I guess I've got to get committed.
The next few days were awful for Tyndall. While his exams might be technically over, the ocean of reading recommendations and practical exercises kept flowing in from the Masters of Inarian Academy. His list grew to over 40 books and scrolls, and nearly everyone wanted to meet with him for remedial training in their subjects. The headmaster had made it clear he would not be allowed to attend Raylan Corps until it was done. The only way to manage that was by pouring himself into studying, as lackluster as his performance was. It didn't help that Rondol was flourishing, asking questions and trading ideas with some of the best minds in the duchies, while Tyndall was slowly making his way through his reading list, struggling through tutoring sessions, attending the odd lecture, and falling more and more behind where the masters thought he should be. It was maddening to hear the broad-faced boy discourse at length on obscure subjects Tyndall was just being introduced to. The only time he felt relief from the oppression of academics was when he took a break. No more than an hour, he promised himself, to go spar in the practice yard in the afternoon. Apart from that, he was in his room, reading, or in the main library, reading, or sitting in the dining hall, reading.
It hurts less if you don't move your lips,
a pleasantly amused female voice interrupted as he was struggling through a philosophy of magic text in the library one afternoon. Tyndall looked up to see Estasia, grinning at him, clad in a simple scholar's smock. With the light behind her, she looked adorable. The same imperial features as Pentandra, but younger and much more rounded, Tyndall decided.
I just learned I didn't have to say the words,
Tyndall complained. I still have to sound them out, especially the Pervenese.
Those are always hard, she agreed sympathetically, even if you grew up with it like I did. I suppose the question is, are you mastering the subject?
Are you jesting? He asked in frustration. I'm barely keeping my head from rolling off my shoulders. I've read two monographs on thaumaturgy that I didn't understand, and I keep forgetting the noble gases in lesser elemental theory. It's just too much to take in, especially in the time I've got left.
What? You're leaving?
She asked, surprised and concerned. Raylan Corps War College, he explained. That will be fun, but my master is paying a lot more attention to how I do here. 4 weeks. Just over 3 now.
I suppose the life of a night mage is full and abundant with such tasks,
she observed, amused, as she sat beside him on the bench unbidden. Tyndall became intensely aware of just how close. She smelled lovely.
This one certainly is,
agreed Tyndall, scooting over to give her room, mostly. That left her side nearly pressed against his own. He found he did not mind. Their shoulders touched now, and he could stare at her pretty face.
Your master is Minolan the Spellmonger, the Mage Lord?
She asked curiously.
Yes,
and no, I can't get you a Witchstone, he told her. Don't even ask.
I wasn't going to,
she said, shaking her head. In alchemy, there isn't much use for them anyway. It's not a power-oriented discipline. And you would know. You're the greatest alchemist of your generation, I hear, Tyndall said, closing his book with a snap. He was merely teasing, but he struck a nerve, he found. Estasia made a sour face and looked away guiltily.
Blow up one barn, and suddenly you're an evil sorceress,
she snorted in disgust.
You blew up a barn?
Tyndall asked, intrigued. He couldn't help but laugh.
What? You didn't know that?
She chuckled, covering her mouth behind a dainty hand.
I thought everyone here knew that,
she said, blushing slightly.
I've been waiting for you to ask about it, but you never did.
We weren't apprised of the gossip before we arrived, he reminded her. Not the minor stuff, anyway.
I'm here in Inarion because Alar Academy wouldn't have me anymore after what I did.
What did you do? Tyndall asked, suddenly desperate to know the entire story.
Before I was even accepted to Alar, another student and I were experimenting with nitrates in one of my father's barns and, well, things got out of control,
she said, blushing.
No one was hurt, not seriously, but...
She shook her head.
There was hay everywhere. The horses were terrified, and the sides of the barn were blown halfway to the next estate.
Now that's impressive, Tyndall said, laughing approvingly.
How is blowing up a barn in the slightest impressive?
She demanded, getting angry at his response.
I used to be a stable boy, he explained to her, before my Rajira came.
Believe me, I can see the appeal of blowing up a barn perhaps more than you do.
You're impressed that I let a spell go all futzy?
She asked, surprised. Let's just say that as a novice war mage, I can appreciate a powerfully destructive spell.
For purely professional reasons,
he said, still chuckling at the thought. Establishing a common connection was highly recommended by the master of Castle Heart.
Well, it was the talk of Wenshaw for months. It was a horrible scandal. People started to talk about me being a wild mage. My father finally imposed on some friends at court to get me sent here, as far away from Wenshaw as he could, until the embarrassment dies down,
she said unhappily. No one in my family likes a reckless mage.
What's happened? I don't know exactly. The other student was the one mixing the compound, and that's where the blast started. She was burnt. Not badly, but we're no longer friends.
So you aren't just the brilliant Wenchari witch who knows more alchemy than a master. You're just in exile because you're an embarrassment, Tyndall snorted, as the girl blushed prettily.
I think I like the former description better, she said, biting her lip in irritation.
Or was that interest? Who wouldn't? He asked sympathetically.
Just as I would prefer to be known as the dashing young knight mage, not the stumbling half-trained apprentice who doesn't deserve his witchstone.
The admission was a bit of vulnerability, true, but Tyndall felt confident in making it. Sire Rose counseled a man to lead a woman by inviting her to share his feelings on something simple. According to the Sage of Love, it would soften her and make her more attracted to him. Sympathy could be a sword in the duel of hearts.
So, you have a few more weeks here? She asked hesitantly, her eyes darting from side to side. Maybe I'll see you from time to time.
Tyndall was almost startled. He hadn't expected the bold move to work so well, but that was clearly an invitation to share her company. Tyndall decided on the spot that Sire Rose was not, as some claimed, merely a cynical courtier. The man was a genius.
Not unless you live at the library, he moaned exaggeratedly,
counting on the common complaint of students everywhere to strengthen the bond. That's where I get most of my sleep these days. She smiled again.
I nearly do. So I guess I'll definitely see you, Sir Tyndall, she said with a toss of her hair,
and made her way across the campus. As warm and pleasant as the exchange was, Tyndall realized after the girl left that she was one more distraction from the books he had to get through. He redoubled his efforts and read voraciously all morning and through luncheon until it was time for his afternoon stretch at the practice yard. This time the students were absent due to some pointless lecture, so he got to work out with the guards, which he found far more satisfying. They knew how to fight, the importance of footwork, and the subtleties of swordplay. None of them were outstanding, but each of them could give him a good run. And he even picked up a few tricks from the new opponents, as a good swordsman will do. Finally, huffing and puffing with the day's effort, he was stripping his armor off regretfully at the end of the hour he'd allotted himself when ancient Galdan said something offhand.
Too bad you can't use war magic on that pile of books, he said approvingly.
Tyndall had just defeated three of his guards using combat enhancements as a special demonstration of his abilities.
I expect it would be nice if you could slow down time enough to get through them all.
Yeah, it would,
Tyndall said automatically, before he started discussing his critique of the ancient's men. The comment stuck in his brain, however, as he walked back across the campus to the North Tower.
Slow down time.
Well, why couldn't it?
He finally asked himself, as the comment lingered in his mind. The combat augmentation spells, he reasoned, were designed to slow your perception of time to allow you the opportunity to choose your options. The other elements of the enhancement, the increased speed, strength, and agility that magic's power could borrow for the war mage, weren't exactly necessary if one wasn't going to fight. They were the elements that consumed magical energy with such abundance. In fact, if one was merely going to read, from what Tyndall understood, many of the drawbacks to the spell faded from importance. Why couldn't he use war magic to study? There had to be some good reason why people didn't do it. He found his feet walking past the great wooden entrance to the North Tower, and back into the kitchens and storerooms while his mind contemplated. Then he found them bounding up the stairs to the Manciple's library, where he immersed himself in answering that question with a passion he'd rarely felt for academic work. His familiarity with the library and its collection of psychomancy led him precisely to the references he needed, and soon he was sitting at the table, surrounded by books and scrolls. The more he read, the more reasons he found to consider the matter. Tyndall found it fascinating. Without the physical augmentations, the perception element of the spell was almost purely psychomantic, he discovered. It was a simple trick of the mind, a magically fueled trick, but it didn't use much power on its own. Psychomantic spells had been around since the earliest days, and some, like the instant recall spell he'd relied upon so frequently of late, had become a staple in most adepts' grimoires. Eventually. But war magic? At least the perception alteration elements of the spells? Those, he found, were rarely employed outside of the discipline. Most magic just didn't require that kind of fast-paced action or necessity for increased perception. Most wizards were content to stumble around like normal people. He found the core element of the spell eventually, of course, in an old Mawini scroll on the subject, the author long lost to history. It was considered a minor curiosity, a spell of dubious value for most occasions, but one could speed perceptions alone, without the power-consuming enhancements of war magic. The spell was actually quite simple, once you grasped the concept he was pleased to learn. He tried it out. A scroll he was to read, a monograph on sigils, lay before him. Tyndall summoned power, formed the necessary symbols in his head, and cast the spell. But nothing seemed to happen. He thought he had futzed it, until he noted how slowly a moth flew through his mage light. He could see the individual dust motes tumble from its wings as it challenged the light in slow motion. Grinning, he began reading the monograph, doing his best to absorb the material as he normally would. It wasn't a huge scroll, only 8 feet of parchment, but he was done before the moth had finished flying through his mage light. He let the spell fail, and his perceptions returned to normal. His retention of the information, he found, was completely intact. Delighted, he then cast the memory spell, and began to chew through the stack of scrolls and books with blinding speed. The next day passed in a daze. While Tyndall's discovery had allowed him to read 4 entire books in one night, as well as 12 scrolls from his list, his mind could only understand a limited part of them. As it was, his dreams were filled with the writings of obscure magi and perturbations in the other world. But he remembered what he'd read. Despite waking up feeling barely refreshed, his mind was filled with magic as he followed his assigned tutoring for the day as best he could. After a disappointing morning working on photomantics theory with Master Honreed, instead of practicing in the yard, Tyndall went back to the Manciple's library, where he wouldn't be disturbed, and began the process of stuffing his brain anew. With dedication and devotion, he managed to read another 6 books before dinner. That was more than he'd read in his first 6 months' apprenticeship. Even though the spell took little power, the mental energy required was immense, and his mind still needed time to absorb and appreciate all the new information. He ate voraciously that evening, heading back to the serving table for seconds and thirds to replenish his arcane reserves. He was so engrossed in his meat that he did not see his other experiment, the lovely alchemist, come up behind him.
"I didn't see you fighting today,"
Astasia said shyly, approaching him as everyone was finishing their meal. There was a note of disappointment in her voice. Tyndall looked up. She looked very attractive today, he noted. Her hair was perfectly combed under her wimple, her dress a simple but elegant Ramiran style in dark red velvet. It suited her complexion and her figure, clearly not a gown she usually wore to class. But he was too wise to note it to her. The remark may have flattered her, but it also might reveal too plainly Tyndall's interest in her. He didn't mind being interested in her, but the moment she knew he was interested in her, according to the laws of love, she would actually become less interested in him. While it might be confusing, he could see Sire Rose's point.
"Too busy studying,"
Tyndall said, looking at her with his mouth full. She looked like she was about to deliver a witty response, to which he could repay a wittier reply, thus escalating into more and more when they were suddenly interrupted by the person he wanted to see the least at the moment, barring the dead god, that idiot Rundal.
"I find that incredibly difficult to believe,"
Rundal said, setting down his trencher next to Tyndall's and bowing far too low for the occasion.
"Moron." "Hello, m'lady. I'm Sir Rundal of Sevendor, this brutish thug's junior apprentice."
He was trying to sound interesting and important and playful all at the same time, which was what Sire Rose and his commentators recommended, but his delivery was embarrassingly bad.
"I'm Astasia,"
the pretty student replied to the boy without visible enthusiasm. She ignored him and kept talking to Tyndall. A minor victory.
So why didn't you really fight today?
It's not fighting. It's sparring, Tyndall explained, swallowing. Whole different thing. I'm just practicing when I'm out there. Working on technique. Working up a sweat.
Astasia wrinkled her nose at the thought, but she didn't seem to mind the image it invoked.
Well, if you plan on sparring tomorrow, let me know, she asked. I find it entertaining to watch. Like a cockfight.
I'll see if I can oblige, he said with a spare smile. Her beautiful brown eyes caught his, and she caught her breath and looked away.
I'm a night mage, too,
Rondal said, in a lame attempt to elicit her interest.
I know, Astasia said absently. I heard. I'll see you anon, Tyndall.
So, it's Tyndall, not Sir Tyndall, Rondal groused, as the shapely mage left the hall with grace and a backward glance over her shoulder.
And she's far more beautiful than you gave her credit for.
I didn't think you were interested in her looks, taunted Tyndall, feeling cocky. I thought you lusted for her mind.
Well, if her mind happens to have a couple of heavy thoughts like that associated with it, all the better.
Rondal blushed.
She's pretty, conceded Tyndall, but I wouldn't spend any coin on it if I was in your boots. She seems to have eyes for me, not you.
But I'm the smart one, Rondal protested. She's supposed to like the smart ones. Tyndall laughed and shook his head.
You sure don't know much about girls, do you, Ron?
Does anyone? Asked Rondal miserably.
If I said yes, would you believe me? Asked Tyndall,
studying his fellow apprentice seriously for once. Rondal's lack of grace around girls was legendary. Perhaps if he gave him some actual useful advice about girls, he'd quit being so painfully awkward. Certainly, it made Tyndall look that much better in comparison. A girl was always more receptive to a confident introduction after rejecting a stammering, stumbling suitor. But he didn't need the help. Rondal studied him back, warily.
Mayhap,
he admitted, grudgingly, just loud enough for Tyndall to hear it. He looked around nervously.
I'm kind of bad at it. So bad that Lady Alia and Lady Estret tried to help me, he lamented.
Tyndall scowled good-naturedly and rolled his eyes.
I thought as much, he sighed.
I know not what our fair mistress told you, but, well, she's mistaken.
They all say they like smart ones,
he explained to his friend philosophically, or funny ones, or rich ones, or good ones, but, well, Ishii has her own ideas about that.
Girls tend to like a certain kind of man, and if you are not that kind of man, or can't portray him effectively, then you will be at best a lady's second choice. A lady for whom you are the second choice, well, she is less likely to share your feelings. Therefore, he reasoned, you need to learn how to be that kind of man, or fake it convincingly,
he added, as he saw his fellow's face grow more ashen.
Lady Alia told me all I needed was to be true to my pleasant character and treat ladies with courtesy and deference, and I would soon have their attention in abundance,
he said defensively. Tyndall could tell that he doubted the words even as he said them.
And she's seduced how many girls? Snorted Tyndall.
I may not know a lot about women, Ron, but one thing I do know is that they rarely tell you what you really need to know about courting one. Indeed, their advice often is worse than your own pathetic bumbling, and you wouldn't think that possible.
Rondal did not contest his assessment, but he brooded about it.
While Tyndall did not have much familiarity with girls, or at least not as much as he would have preferred, what he had far outweighed the older boy's experience. He hoped that gave his words some additional heft in Rondal's ear.
So tell me, O wise master, where lies the key to Astasia's heart, purely as an academic exercise?
He added dismissively.
Astasia?
I'd say with that one, for all of her pretensions of academics, you would likely catch her attention more by flexing your muscles than showing off your knowledge.
A lady of her renowned intellect? Asked Rondal, surprised.
She might respect intelligence, Tyndall reasoned, but it's not her mind that controls her heart. This much is no secret. Girls like muscles. Astasia likes big muscles as much as any other girl.
Gods be praised,
Rondal said sourly, as he studied his own spare physique.
Now all I have to do is learn to conjure some muscles. Muscles would be a start, but they wouldn't be enough, Tyndall said sagely, as he considered his courting from an academic perspective. Astasia isn't that dumb. What arouses her interest, in my opinion, is confidence and competence. Not achievement, exactly, he said appraisingly. She's not the type to be allured by position or title, or even academic prize. Nor, alas for you, pure intellect. She admires spirit, character and confidence more than anything else, I'd say. And that's good news for you, he added. Why? Rondell asked, suddenly interested. Because confidence is easier to conjure than muscles, he pointed out, stabbing the last bit of meat on his trencher with his knife and flipping it into his mouth with a sigh, and far easier to fake. Pretend to be confident? Rondell asked, bitterly amused. Essentially, agreed Tyndall, finally pushing himself away from his plate. It's actually not that hard. You just have to practice. And Astasia is a good girl to practice on. Why? Asked Rondell, surprised and hopeful. Do you really think I have an opportunity to catch her eye? Ha! Ishi's left nip. No, Tyndall laughed at the prospect. Not with me around. She's already decided that she likes me. Well, maybe I can get her to change her mind, Ron said, standing from the table defiantly. Tyndall studied him. Do you really think so? Really? Honestly? Rondell continued to look defiant, but then doubt stole his attention. No, probably not, he finally admitted through clenched teeth. So why are you helping me then, just to witness the humiliation of my inevitable failure? No, shrugged Tyndall, realizing that he didn't indeed wish to see his fellow suffer. Not at all. I said Astasia would be good practice, and I was genuine. It is good practice, and not without design. Because around every girl like Astasia, there's another girl hiding behind her skirts, coveting what she has. That girl will strive to change the stars in their courses if it would mean she gains the prize. And you're that prize? Rondell asked skeptically. I didn't say it was a good prize, Tyndall smirked, but there's almost always a girl on the lookout for the boy who can't get the girl he wants, which keeps the boy that girl likes too busy fighting her off to pursue that girl properly. Hence, she has recourse to that boy as a consolation, and that boy is you, Tyndall said confidently. It is? There is? She is? He asked, confused. I'd stake my life on it, boasted Tyndall. Now, before you go looking for her and making an ass of yourself, there's a certain scroll you need to read. Tyndall continued his studies late into the night, long after the campus was silent. With judicious use of his newly learned spells, he was able to make significant progress on his list, doing days' worth of reading in hours. And thanks to blue magic, every work he read he could recall at need, word for word. Much to his own amazement, he was starting to understand it, too. Even thaumaturgy, his nemesis. Things began making sense. How Kalidor's etheric field, the magisphere, interacted with sapient thought, allowing willful direction of its energies, for example. The mystery revealed itself with incredible clarity in his mind that night. How the same magical architecture that allowed elementals to mimic the movements of life could be adapted to influence any inert system, if properly understood. How photoni, the bricks of light that ricocheted around the universe, acted as both matter and energy. All of it started to make sense. Slowly, sometimes, or in great leaps of understanding, some obscure and darkened area of his education lit up. He found it startling when it happened. Sometimes it occurred when something he read in an apparently unrelated topic triggered a thought, and then another, and then whole new areas of understanding would open up like a sudden avalanche. His instructors began to notice a difference as well. The next day's lessons went much easier, and he was able to manifest some far more complicated spells than he'd previously dared, earning some grudging praise from the duo photomantics instructor before lunch. He was feeling in a generous mood while he ate, and for once he was happy to be discussing academics with his fellow apprentice. Not about magic, he was nearly sick of it, but a subject he was far more comfortable and conversant with, girls.
Rondal had found the reading he'd recommended and devoured the short treatise in one sitting. But where Tyndall had seen the beautiful pragmatism of Sire Rose's discourse, Rondal was sceptical and troubled about the ethics of the matter. That led to a debate in which Tyndall tried to answer questions for Rondal, who had brought the elegant scroll containing Sire Rose's 16 laws with him. Among his difficulties with it was the nature of its very existence. It just seemed scandalous to take what should rightly be left up to Ishii's will and turn it into a base trade, Rondal complained, not for the first time. But why not? Tyndall countered. If we study magic and warfare and all of the other things we must to master them, why would not a man apply the principles of science and magic to the realm of the heart? It is no dishonour to Ishii. On the contrary, by knowing the laws, we pay her homage. There are some things that should remain a mystery, Rondal insisted. That mystery can lead to misery if a man is unschooled and unprepared, Tyndall riposted. The laws are as fundamental to Ishii as the lesser table is to Irentia. Do you think that the maids you court are not preparing themselves against the day they find their love? What about them causes you such discomfort? Well, let's begin with the very first of the laws. Pray ne'er to a maiden profess thy love, lest she have first declared her heart to thee. To do else is to invite her scorn. Why should a man not tell a woman he holds affections for her? He demanded. Because it shows weakness of the heart, and women cannot abide weakness in a man, Tyndall explained matter-of-factly. He knew this one. A man who forces her to declare her heart first holds his hand above hers in the affair. It proves his strength, and therefore vindicates the risk she takes in such a revelation. And the second law, seek ye always to inspire jealousy within the castle of her heart by her vision of your flirtations and enjoyments with other maids. Such an action is cruel to her, and dishonourable to the other maids, Rondal pointed out. Is it? Countered Tyndall, breaking a loaf of soft bread. He was eating naught but bread today, so that he would have energy for sparring later. Would you not say that maids contest among themselves for the attention of men, the way men contest among themselves for feminine attention? Well, yes, Rondal admitted. The world condemns a woman, not of her temple, who too freely grants Ishii's blessing, does it not? Yes, of course, blushed Rondal. Yet you would encourage a man to just declare his affections before he knows a maiden's heart. Then you would urge him to spend his commitment to her favour so cheaply without knowing if she shares his feelings, or even the worthiness of the maid in question. What's wrong with that? Should he value his own company so little, so soon will she. When she sees that other maids are eager to share your affections, she naturally seeks to guard her mate. Or mate presumptive. The third law is easy enough to understand, he continued, before Rondal had time to regroup his thoughts. That was, forever shall the errant make the mission, not the maid the target of his desire, and thus shall the maid come to desire him whose eye lights elsewhere. It was one of Tyndall's favourites. You wouldn't want a knight throwing a mission over a girl. That would be stupid, Rondal conceded. But this one, the sixth law. Certainly, in the mind of a maiden, about your thoughts is love's festering foe. Instead, in conversation, challenge her assumptions, evade her inquiries, tease her for her motivations, and obfuscate your mind from her. Thus she preoccupies herself with your heart as an initiate ponders a mystery, Rondal said triumphantly. What about it? It seems clear enough. Well, it's saying don't. Tell a girl what you're thinking. Yes, Tyndall agreed flatly. You read it very well. Even the big words. Even if she asks, Rondal continued, ignoring the jibe. Yes, Tyndall agreed, pouring a mug of the weak campus ale for himself from the common pitcher. But isn't that cruel? Mean-spirited, at least, and certainly unfair. Rondal, Tyndall said, catching his fellow's eye, think back carefully. Have you ever once had something good happen when you told a girl what she wanted to know? Or did it somehow turn in your hand like a rusty knife? The question hung in the air for a few moments, as Rondal searched his memory.
Apparently he could not suggest a counter-argument. Then the boy sighed.
The eighth law, then. Apologize unto a maid, only at great need, for such sorrows professed, smell of weakness in a maiden's nose. To be strong in word and deed and character draws a maid's attention, even as needless apologies repel it. I can sort of see this one, I guess, but shouldn't you be sorry for something? That's just basic politeness.
That took a while for me to understand, too, until I remembered that awful woman at Yule, the one from the New Domains. Before things got crazy, he said with a grin, do you remember how her husband kept apologizing to her? It was, I'm sorry we were late, my wife, and you were right, my love. I'm sorry I ever doubted you. Do you remember?
Yule is a bit hazy,
Rundle admitted, shooting Tyndall a nasty look.
Oh, right. Sorry, anyway. First you felt sorry for that man, but then you realized that he was doing it to himself. She had grown so used to his little apologies, like a cat to milk in the morning, that she stopped hearing him altogether. She despised him, and everyone else despised him for allowing it to happen.
I'll have to take your word for it,
Rundle said without expression. Sorry, Tyndall repeated. A legitimate apology for a specific wrong is one thing, but to have one fall from your lips with every breath, well, it's just damn annoying, to a man or woman, but particularly to a woman. If the man she's with admits he's wrong over and over again, she'll quickly start to wonder why she's with him.
I can see that point, Rundle conceded. The key is strength,
Tyndall summed up, as he gathered his belongings together before his next session. You have to appear strong, even if you aren't. Confident, even if you're scared. Bold, not timid.
You're not really helping my case,
Rundle said dejectedly. It's not a mountain you can climb in a day, Tyndall said, standing. It's like magic. You have to understand the theory and then practice the drills until you reach mastery.
Seems an awful lot of trouble to go through for love.
Tyndall grinned. The best horses are usually also the hardest to break. Besides, he said, nodding towards the table where a knot of female students still lingered, you never cast a net to catch just one kind of fish. Rundle turned his head just long enough to catch their attention. They giggled and looked away predictably. One young student in particular, Lindra, he thought her name was, one of the pullets in Astasia's circle, seemed quite intent on them. Far less comely than the Wenshari alchemist, Lindra had a thirsty look about her when she gazed at them. At him, in particular, he realized. But she seemed the type of girl to be more than willing to accept second prize, but make her rival work like nine hells for first. Just the sort of girl to throw at Rundle to keep him busy and away from Astasia. He had served his purpose there, providing an excellent poor alternative to Tyndall in Astasia's eyes. Now he just had to keep him out of the way, and Lindra might be an easier answer than finding some place to hide his body. Ron looked at him thoughtfully.
You might be right,
Rundle conceded, but leave the pronouncements of wisdom to the scholars. The way you mix metaphors makes me weep inside.